Okay, thank you everybody for coming. So today we will be covering, we'll be starting the chapter 8. We'll be starting chapter 8 for the first canto. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and coming. I hope I can do a little bit of justice. I didn't really do much of preparation, but hopefully you can forgive me for that. Gurujan Prabhu entitles this section as Krishna Again Saves His Devotees in Chapter 8. So we'll start with the prayers.
Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishthiki.
So the chapter is titled Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit Saved. So there are two parts of this chapter, as the title itself suggests. Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit Saved, but the order is different. But the order is opposite of the title. Parikshit Saved is the first part of the first 16 verses, and then Prayers by Queen Kunti is the next part, which will be covered by other folks. So we'll start with the. So there are only 16 verses that have to be covered in 40-45 minutes. So you can imagine 16 verses. I have about 38 slides, but don't worry, 16 of those slides are just the verses itself. But I'll try to, you know, see if we can manage the time, because our time master is going to point out to me very soon. Maybe it'll go till 11:30 or something, but. Oh, what time we should stop? So then I can accordingly, we can change it.
So I think whatever you can do fast.
Okay.
I guess I'm the only. It's okay, you can continue.
Yeah, we'll push.
No. So is there a time you are saying right now, Prabhu?
Yeah, because 11 o'clock is the Dharma practice.
Oh, 11 is the Dharma practice.
But yours is only in the beginning?
Yeah, beginning. First to
see. Okay,
so just let me know. I can change the pace anytime. So, just say the Sanskrit of a few ones. So this one will just say the translation. Suta Goswami said, thereafter the Pandavas, desiring to deliver water to the dead relatives who had desired it, went to the Ganges with Draupadi. The ladies walked in front. So just to give the history of what happened in chapter 7 was that the war is of Kurukshetra is over, and Ashwatthama had attacked with the Brahmastra, and then Arjuna had caught him, and then there was a fight. Thank you. This is going to make me more difficult to speak, because never had this experience. So Ashwatthama had there was a dilemma for Arjuna, whether he should spare Ashwatthama or should kill Ashwatthama. And then Krishna essentially saved protected him from that dilemma by giving him the ideal solution of actually insulting him or cutting his hair off and driving him away. So that way he kills them but doesn't kill them. So that's essentially, after Ashwatthama has gone away, then you can think that the war is almost over, and they are now, because the battle of Kurukshetra is over and so many people have been killed from both sides. So now the Pandavas are actually doing that cultural deed of offering respects to the dead relatives, and this is a part of that. So what I will do is I will be reading the first three verses and then just giving a few points of what I have heard regarding this. So this is pretty self-explanatory, how they are offering respects to the dead relatives. Then second verse, having lamented over them and sufficiently offered Ganges water, they bathed in the Ganges, whose water is sanctified due to being mixed with the dust of the lotus feet. That is too much. Thank you. I want to serve you. So having lamented over them and sufficiently offered Ganges water, they bathed in the Ganges, whose water is sanctified due to being mixed with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. Verse 3. There sat the king of the Kurus, Maharaj Yudhishthir, along with his younger brothers and Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti and Draupadi, all overwhelmed with grief. Lord Krishna was also there. So the scene is pretty clear that they, as a matter of culture, as I heard in the lectures, by the way, most of it, whatever I am speaking, is mostly what I heard in three lectures by Romopad Maharaj on these 16 verses. So I'm just going to pretty much act like a, hopefully like a good parrot, and just repeat whatever Maharaj had said in these three. So luckily I found those three lectures exactly about these verses. So the first aspect, first point is that the battle of Kurukshetra is a very tragic battle, right? So what is interesting here, if you see the folks, the folks which have been mentioned here, Maharaj Yudhishthir, younger brothers, and then along with him is Dhritarashtra also is there, and Gandhari is also there. And Romapad Maharaj clarifies in his lecture that also the 100 widows of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra are also there. So you can imagine it's a very tragic, you know, movement, that essentially, although the battle was fought between two sides, but everybody involved in that battle was somehow or other related to everybody. So it was a very, at the end of it, that were so many, how many million people? 600? 600 million people died. So how that many people were killed, so it was a very tragic moment for everybody. And Prabhupada in the purport says that the Lord was equally sympathetic to all. So that's also an interesting point. It's not that the Lord is at that time, you know, sympathetic only to the Pandavas. He is also equally sympathetic to the other side also. That is to Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, everybody, you know. So what was necessary to be done, Lord did that, but he is finally equally sympathetic to all. And actually this theme will also carry on forward in these verses later on, about how the Lord is actually equal to all. And it's very clear that the culture of offering prayers to the departed, the specific culture is that all the people are carrying a pot of Ganges water, and they are marching out in a procession to the Ganges. It was a little bit confusing for me, that I didn't exactly understand if they carry a pot of Ganges water and then go to the Ganges, or fill it there. Maybe they already have some Ganges water and they fill it up. So Prabhupada says in the purport, they carry a pot of Ganges water and then they go to the Ganges, and the ladies are walking in the front. And that's how they go there. They go to the Ganges and then they bathe in the Ganges there. So that is the cultural thing which is followed. And then they are also grieving over the people who have. So there is a lamentation, or there is a grieving which is being done. So here Bhurijan Prabhu says that this is the Lord's sweet exchanges with his devotees. And devotee is actually revealing their mind to the Lord by grieving in front of him. And the Lord is also participating in that exchange with them. So, and again, so I could see that, you know, they are, because they're revealing their mind, it's like the Guhyam Akhyati Prichati, that's because they have, this is between the Lord and his devotees, and amongst the devotees that they are grieving. And Burijan Prabhu also makes a point here that you can't, you know, first, before, you know, because this gruesome, whatever, or the tragic event has happened, you can't directly think about philosophy at that time. You know, in terms of, hey, why should you grieve? Well, what is the reason to grieve? You know, you can all give all philosophical reasons why there should not be any grief. But first, there has to be lamentation. And when there is that lamentation, there has to be means, first you should allow that lamentation to happen, in one sense. So, once that lamentation happens, then the heart will open to hear anything. Without, if we, you know, if that time, you know, if you think that it's, there should not be, you know, let's not talk any emotions at all, this is come to, then the heart will not be open to actually hear the absolute truth. So that part has to be. So you can see here, although, you know, otherwise it's, you know, you can say they know all the Bhagavad, you know, Bhagavad Gita is known and everything, what's the reason for grief? But it's not, but there has to be the, you know, that lamentation or grief should be allowed. So that's the first three verses. Then the first, then the fourth verse, and now essentially comes the trying to mitigate or that grief, or how do you, how a person who is in grief, who is bewildered, how has he to be, how should we try to mitigate their grief? How should we try to pacify them? This is the verse, and Prabhupada's purport is completely about that here. So, the translation says, citing the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions upon living beings, Lord Sri Krishna and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected. So, here the key word is, so first there was lamentation, as you can see, and then there is, and then Lord Sri Krishna and the Munis are now trying to pacify those who were shocked and affected. So how are they doing that? They are citing the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions upon living beings. So here, the Prabhupada is translating it as citing the stringent laws of the Almighty. But if you look at the Sanskrit, it is kalasya, kalasya gatim. So it is actually time. So citing the effect of time, that, you know, and the, and its reaction upon, because crying time is nothing but kalosmi. So time is nothing but the, you know, the force of the Almighty. Okay. So here is a interesting, how Prabhupada relates the purport here is very interesting. He starts with that time is, you know, obviously is the stringent laws of the Almighty. But then, what is the laws of the Almighty or laws of God? Prabhupada then brings the, what is the laws of the Almighty? The laws given by the Lord? It is dharma. So it is, Prabhupada then relates it to dharma, that the stringent. So here he is going to, it's going to be an entire summary of how to pacify the persons in grief. So we'll go through that, about how Prabhupada points that out here. So first point is our eternal subjugation, which means we are eternally subservient to the Lord. Eternally subservient. We will never be equal to the Lord or greater than him. So if we are subservient, means there is a law of God. That we don't, whoever we are subservient to, that means we are following a law which he is giving to us. So that is dharma. That is dharma. And so then Rompal Maharaj in his lecture says that religion is laws given by God and a religious person who follows the laws given by God. So it's just so we can gain happiness only through following these laws. There is no possibility of happiness without following these laws which are given by God. And that happiness both material and spiritual. Both of these kinds of happiness can happen only through the follows given below. Now, how should we follow these laws? In the material world, we should follow these laws as a duty. And then in the spiritual world, we automatically follow. It is spontaneous, loving, devotional service. So in both cases, we are subservient. But in the material world, we should do that as a matter of duty. So we should follow that dharma as a matter, the law as a matter of duty. So this is about our eternal subjugation. Now Prabhupada talks about that why, what's happening in our materially conditioned state when we are not able to really see this reality of the material world and the spiritual world and what is our real dharma. He says in our material conditioned state, we don't have that vision. So we can't really see. We're just conditioned. We can't really see the reality. So because of want of spiritual vision, we cannot see ourselves and we cannot see the Lord. We cannot see the reality. And that is what is causes material affection. So material affection stems from this lack of vision. So misconception. So what's happening is they are lamenting, right? The people are grieving because they have lost all of their relatives. But in one sense, it is material affection because it is things like my son is lost, my father is lost, whatever. It's a material affection which is causing. How do you mitigate that grief, that material affection? So Prabhupada is giving that formula. So he's saying material affection stems from this lack of spiritual vision. And material affection is mine, right? This is mine. My son, this is mine. So that misconception of mine, what is mine, what I am lamenting for the loss of, stems from the misconception of I. Because I don't know who I am, that's why I don't know what is mine. So that material affection essentially is coming from the misconception of I. And that is why the first thing to understand is who really am I. And that's why even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna starts with the first point of who really we are. Because if we really know who we are, then we know that the body is the one which has just died, but the soul is actually there. It has just moved on to another place. So that if you know that real conception of I, from that you will know that it was not anything mine which was lost, just the soul has moved to another place. So at that time, so how do we get this knowledge? Is through this. So this real pacification for those in grief can be given through this spiritual knowledge, based on this spiritual knowledge, transcendental knowledge. And that can only be injected by the association of devotees, by a devotee. So a devotee can actually do that. So we just had a recent thing at, Manoj Prabhu, his father-in-law, Shalini Mataji's father, he just suddenly, in his sleep, actually, he was very healthy, and in his sleep, he left his body, just suddenly. He was here, actually, last summer. So it was a very tragic incident, and then they went left the next day, etc. So we could see him. It was very difficult. It was a very difficult time for them. So at that time, from the Bhakti Vedanta Hospital in Bombay, because they are very close to that, they reached out to this Gopinath Prabhu who had come here from Dumbek, and he because he knows them, and he ended up sending somebody there to their home for. So there is Bhakti Vedanta Hospital is what is called as a spiritual care center. In fact, Radhanath Maharaj had said that if you don't have spiritual care, there is no need for the hospital at all. Should better even close it. The only reason we are doing that is we can actually provide spiritual care, not care of the body. So the bodily care has to be given, but finally we have to give spiritual care. So spiritual care department person, I didn't know that they do it like that also, but they actually ended up sending one person there to their home, and that person actually went there for 5 straight days and spent like some time there, few hours there. And he was just telling them about, I mean, and they, you know, whatever he was telling them, but they're specially trained in that purpose. So they can actually talk, they can be in that strange home, you don't know anybody there, but they can still be there and they can talk, you know, give a spiritual message to them in that moment of grief and still not come across as somebody who is, you know, whatever, you know, they're still not still come across as somebody who is just come, you know, coming without any... I mean, their message can make it through actually to them. What I heard from Manoj Prabhu and Shalini Mataji and all is that the whole family was very inspired, very, very inspired. In such a difficult schedule, they were very inspired by those few hours of association, extremely inspired. So it was just an example that a devotee in a very difficult state can go into such this thing and give that transcendental message, which can make it through to them, and because it is the absolute truth and coming from the mouth of it through descending parampara through the devotee, it can have that effect on them. So here, this is what we should be trying to doing after that. So the cycle is first allow the lamentation, and then you give this transcendental knowledge, which is based upon this real conception of I, from which comes the affection of mine, the conception of mine, and that's how the material affection can be mitigated and the grief can be mitigated. But at that point, but how many times would we be able to do this? So Rompad Maharaj makes a point also here, which is a very practical point. If we experience some, you know, anybody experience, amongst the devotees especially experiences something like that, how many times would we be able to go and talk about transcendental knowledge at that time? Will be very difficult, right? So what can we do? Just if it is difficult, you know, somebody is whatever, somebody died very close to them, we go there, what do we talk transcendental knowledge?
Just be with them,
yeah. Right? So just be with them. So that's what Rompad Maharaj says in his lecture, is that not everybody can take it at that time. So sometimes just be there and help out. So, you know, take kids to the school, or just be there for them, or give prasadam for them, or do something. Just be there for them. So that is something which can be done. It could be multiple things. You know, one is devotees already know that knowledge. So you may not go and tell devotees that knowledge immediately. Or it could be, I would think there could be non-devotees who may not know that knowledge, but they're not ready to take it at that time. So first of all, there has to be an emotional connection that you can make with them, right? Unless you make that emotional connection, you would not be able to, that message will not make it through. So the heart has to open at that point. So that if you connect that way, then the message will go through. So practically we can understand that. So then once you make that emotional connection, if you find the chance, you should be able to talk about that. Then Maharaj says in his lecture that, you know, it's the level of the people also. So Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, others, Pandavas, they were at that high level that they could understand the message. So Lord Krishna and the Munis gave that message at that time, but others may not be able to take it. So this is just a practical tip about this. Okay. So moving on to 1.8.5. The clever Duryodhan and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhishthir, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Duryodhan were killed by him. Others also died, their duration of life having decreased for their rough handling of the hair of Queen Draupadi. So here is just a description of, you know, it's the stringent laws of God, which was being described before in the previous verse. So the stringent laws of God was translated as time, what is happening. Here is one of the stringent laws which has been described. You would think that why this verse has come. Because it's saying that what was the act which was being committed? They had, the clever Duryodhan and his party, first of all, had cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhishthir, who had no enemy. You know, Ajat, I think he's called Ajat Shatru in general, I had heard somewhere. He doesn't have, King Yudhishthir did not have any enemy, but they usurped his kingdom, right? And another thing which is being mentioned is that Durshasan, the son, the younger brother of Duryodhan, had roughly handled the hair of Queen Draupadi. And under obviously the instruction and guidance of Duryodhan and Karna and everybody. By the way, Karna was specifically involved in this exercise. So when people praise Karna, in one sense, then you could see that he was actually the one who was specifically involved in this particular exercise also. So when you do that, then the stringent laws of the Almighty act on you and your duration of life is reduced. So here the purport is very significant. And you, everybody would have heard about this before also. Here, Prabhupada talks about five categories of beings which are to be protected. Five categories of beings. And in fact, how civilized or cultured a society is measured by how well are these five categories of beings protected. So it starts with the Brahmanas. And then Prabhupada Maharaj says in lecture that each of these actually bring great value. So, Brahmanas, first of all, Brahmanas. Why? Because they maintain the institution of Varna and Ashram, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life. It's amazing. The definition is very nice. Varna and Ashram is the most scientific culture for what? For the attainment of spiritual life. Very, it's really extremely scientific how it works. So, and why Maharaj says in his lecture, that the head of the spiritual body is the Brahmana, right? So the head of the spiritual body does all the things about like what? He speaks, he thinks, he leads, he eats on behalf of the Lord, does sacrifices on behalf of the Lord, right? So all of these functions are to be done by the Brahman. But now all of these functions are done by the Shudras. So the whole thing has totally changed. It's the legs or, you know, other nonsense senses that they are doing the job instead of the Brahmanas doing the job of leading, thinking, speaking. So the Brahmanas are supposed to speak transcendental knowledge. All of these things will come only when the Brahmanas are protected. So the institution of Varna and Ashram, as I heard in another lecture, is that the society was like this, that the Brahmanas would be called by other people to come to their homes to speak, to do some yajñas and pujas and other things. So because they will be called very much like that and people were interested in those kind of activities, so imagine the entire society is interested in those kind of activities. So Brahmanas can be very easily maintained. Can be very easily maintained. It's not going to be a problem. So they don't accept any salary, which is the definition of, because they are not anybody's slave. But because there is so much demand in an economic way of these things, that they will be maintained very nicely. So this was the if once Brahmanas are maintained, then everything, the whole Varna and Ashram can be maintained. And Prabhupada, as he has, we have heard before, said that the purpose of ISKCON is to create a few Brahmanas in the society. So that is the purpose of. So Namo Brahmana Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. So the second one, or actually the first one, is the cows, even before the Brahmanas, because the cows maintain the most miraculous form of food, that is milk, for maintaining the finer tissues of the brain, for understanding higher aims of life. Again, it's about for understanding higher aims of life, milk is the right amount of food. And you can also think that once you maintain cows, you maintain the ox, then agriculture can be maintained with that, and so many other things with all the byproducts of cows. And so many things. So the entire simple, you know, simple life, high thinking, simple living, gets maintained very much easily by the maintenance of cows. Then the third is women, because maintaining and protecting the women maintains the chastity of society, by which we can get a good generation for peace. I just took my purport directly. We can get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. So, instead of women liberation, it's women protection. So, it's a protection of women which is going to actually give the... So, a woman is protected when she is by the father, as a child, by the husband, and then later on by the son. So, all the time she is under somebody's protection. And by doing that, we get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. Otherwise, it can create havoc. As Arjuna himself says, that when the women are not protected, that will lead to unwanted progeny, that will lead to a society which is totally uncivilized, and everything goes. So it's the foundation, the protection of women. Then obviously children is the next one, gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. So we can see here, by protecting the children itself in the temple with all these schools and other things that are being done, that it is, we protect the children. And Prabhupada says an important point in the purport itself, it begins not at the, even at the birth, it begins at garbha, at the moment of conception, by doing garbhadan sanskar. That time itself, the child, because of the consciousness of the mother and father, will automatically get that good consciousness. So the child is born with that good consciousness already. And we protect the children also by giving them spiritual education, I was thinking, in one way. Because, as Prabhupada said, the outside education is slaughterhouse, spiritual slaughterhouse. So we protect them by taking them towards the goal of life, by giving them spiritual education. That's what should be done. And then finally, the elderly, it gives them a chance to prepare themselves for a better life after death. So the society's culture, how cultured it is measured based upon this. So Prabhupada says in the purport that this complete outlook is based upon factors which are leading to successful humanity, where the ultimate goal is going back to Godhead for everybody. As against the civilization of, Prabhupada's favorite language generally, polished cats and dogs, because the ultimate goal is nothing or sense gratification essentially. I mean, either people don't know why they are doing what they're doing, or they just like, you know, just make life as comfortable as possible. So this whole outlook, because once you remove that goal, then there is no reason to maintain all of this. So now what has happened is, because you removed that goal itself, once you remove that goal, there is no reason to maintain all of these things. They're not really standing on any foundation. So this whole, what is the basis of that, is that ultimate goal, the spiritual goal of going back to Godhead. Now, also, Queen Draupadi was just insulted. She was not even killed. But Prabhupada is saying that even insulting is prohibited. What about killing? So one loses duration of life by insulting any of these beings or by a chaste woman, as happened in the case of Draupadi. Okay. So moving on to 1.8.6. The Lord Krishna, so then Lord Krishna, after all of this, you know, the funeral ceremony and other, and the grieving, Lord Krishna caused 3 well-performed Ashwamedha Yajnas, horse sacrifices, to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhishthir, and thus caused his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. So Lord Krishna helped him perform 3, and Indra had performed 100 such sacrifices. And but interestingly, it is being equated. So Prabhupada is going to point about that point. For he just did 3, but Indra did 100. So how come that they are equating Yudhishthir? And this guy is in, this guy means Yudhishthir, he is on the earth. He's just a tiny planet here. For Indra is in Swargloka. So in Swargloka, his opulence is amazingly more, and Yudhishthir is very less. So how come that, anybody wants to say something before I say what Prabhupada says? Krishna, you would know the answer. Huh?
Krishna was personally present, and it was done under his direction.
It was done under his direction. That's definitely true, but it can be a little more specific.
Indra was doing it from selfish to Vishnu was doing it also. He was just following instruction, selflessly.
Yeah, so anyway, pretty much every answer is correct in one way. You want to say something? Go ahead, same thing. Anybody else? Amitanandra was saying, I know the answer, but I won't. I know it, but that's okay. Okay, so It's Prabhupada says in the purport that it's because Yudhishthira is a devotee of the Lord. Specifically, he's a devotee of the Lord. So the devotee is very glorious. So the devotee of the Lord is the most glorious. His glory increases just because he's a devotee. So Bhakti Vikas Maharaj in his lecture on this verse, he says that devotee of Krishna is greater than any materialist doing any kind of most charitable work, the greatest. So then he equates that with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a statement that devotee who is in the temple is ringing a bell. He's just ringing a bell like that. So Bhakti Vikas Maharaj is saying this person is greater than the greatest charitable person in the entire world. You know, whatever, you can just name anybody. You can name anybody. Actually, Maharaj goes on to say Mother Teresa. He does say that, you know, if at least in terms of the just a charitable work, he's saying and Maharaj says, some people say, why do I make this outrageous statement? This is an outrageous statement. Why? He's saying that devotee is the great, and it's not just spiritual benefit, he says even material benefit, the devotee is the greatest. And what is the greatest opulence? Association with a great devotee, with a devotee, for which is association with the Lord, is the greatest opulence that can be there. So the devotee that way is the greatest. So now, Prabhupada brings another point there, that we would think like the Lord is partial. Because why only devotee of the Lord is most glorious? Why not others? Father, right? Father should be true, same to everybody. So why only devotee of the Lord? So here is the you know, that classic example, and then it will be even more related later also in these verses, is that the Lord is like the sun, which is showing light everywhere, and it depends on the receptivity of the person, how much he is going to receive it. According to that receptivity, he gets that much mercy, and whatever mercy he gets, according to that, he gets that much glory. So the Lord is equally giving to everybody. He is not partial. It depends on how much you are able to receive it. That's it. So the teacher is teaching to everybody. One student is they're doing very well because he is absorbing from the teacher. The other people are just, you know, sitting in the back bench. That's it. That's the difference. So is Krishna partial to his devotees? Krishna is equal to everyone. And Rompal Maharaj says it's an equal opportunity organization. It's the same. Everybody has the same opportunity. Nobody has less or more. Depending upon even there, whether man or woman or child or this or that or whatever, everybody has the same. The devotee is most receptive to his mercy, and the devotee represents the 100% full-fledged mercy of the Lord. Because he is receiving completely, he also himself represents the full-fledged mercy of the Lord, so he is most glorified. So that's the that is the point why Maharaj Yudhishthira, he only has performed 3, he is equated to Lord Indra, who has performed over 100 such verses. So now, the inevitable is going to happen, that Lord Krishna wants to leave, right? So now, Rompal Maharaj said that in first canto, there are 3 times that Krishna wants to leave, and people won't let him leave. Because first time is this, which is going to happen with Uttara. Second time is what is going to happen with Queen Kunti, because she is just praying. And third time it's going to happen with, what is the third one? The third time is going to happen with Yudhishthira Maharaj, because I think he is he is unable to get out of his grief that, you know, so many people have been killed. So all the 3 times in the first canto, he is trying to leave, but he will not, you know, he would not be able to leave. So Lord Shri Krishna then prepared for his departure. He invited the sons of Pandu after having been worshipped by the Brahmanas headed by Srila Vyasadeva. The Lord also reciprocated greetings. So what is interesting in this? The Lord prepared for his departure, that symbol. He invited the sons of Pandu, that's also. After having been worshipped by the Brahmanas headed by Srila Vyasadeva, the Lord also reciprocated greeting. So what is reasonably odd here? Huh? Odd means you are different from the ordinary. Lord is respecting the Brahmana. Is that odd?
No, not in the sense of odd. Worship by Brahmana, and then he's respecting the Brahmana. He's also Pratipujita. He's reciprocating equally.
Yeah, he's reciprocating equally. So what is odd about that? Odd means unusual. Just not...
Greetings.
Huh?
I don't understand the meaning of greetings in that context. So that may be a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not specifically greetings. But. So, it's mutual, right? First, the Brahmanas are... But who is Lord Krishna? He's a Kshatriya. So, the Brahmana is worshipping a Kshatriya. Doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that the Brahmana is happening a Kshatriya. So, and also odd is... that the Lord is worshipping somebody else. That also doesn't happen. So both things are odd. So Prabhupada says in the purport that the Brahmanas are worshipping Lord Krishna, although he's a Kshatriya, because they know that he is the Supreme Lord. That's why they're worshipping. So Lord, as the Supreme Lord, he accepts those. But at the same time, he wants to follow the Chaturvarnya Maya system. He wants to follow the system that he himself has set. So he also reciprocates the greetings because the Kshatriya has to worship the Brahmana. Because if he doesn't follow, then nobody will follow. Like the same Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Well, even more interesting is that during the battle, he was adopting the role of a Suta, a chariot driver, which is actually the role of a Shudra.
Oh, yeah.
He was adopting the role of the teacher,
yes.
The role of a Brahmana.
Yes.
And in his youth, he was a cowherd boy, which is a Vaishya.
Yes.
And then he's a Kshatriya in Dwarka. So right. He's actually playing all the...
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't... Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. What about the Brahmana?
Instructing Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, instructing Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing it up. Okay, so that's... Kshatriya is worshipped by Brahmanas because Brahmanas knew his position and Lord reciprocated the greetings. Okay. So now, as soon as he seated himself on the chariot to start for Dwarka, he saw Uttara hurrying toward him in fear. So, this is, so you can imagine, as Maharaj says in the lectures, you can imagine that there is a scene, you know, the Lord is leaving back to Dwarka, that means so many people would be around him, you know, trying to see him off, you know, so many emotions and everything. And at that time, Uttara is just running towards him, seeking for help. So it's a very sort of climatic in terms of a scene, a very tragic also, as you'll see. So here is the point, again, this is the theme which is going to follow, that the Lord is the dependence on the Lord, which is pretty obvious that you... So, it's not just the Pandus, but the entire Pandav family, all whenever they are in an extreme difficulty, so, as Maharaj says in the lecture that, you know, a very respectable relative could be there, or even Bhima is there, and so many, you know, big guys are there. But Uttara is, in case of extreme emergency, they can immediately think of the Lord. That's it. That's their full, complete dependence on the Lord. They cannot think of anything but always taking shelter of the Lord. So that's a very striking point, as you can see. And the Lord especially looks after his devotee, as again Prabhupada points out in the purport. Though he protects everyone, but the example is the father is more attentive to the little son who is exclusively dependent on the father. He's exclusively dependent on the father. So here I was trying to, because this is the theme about, having that complete always absorption in taking shelter of the Lord. Somehow or other we are always, well, what is my material conditioning? That I am always thinking that I can resolve it. Whatever happens, I am going to take care of it. somehow or other. And if I can't take care of it, I'll be depressed. Right? Or feeling just frustrated. But the devotee, he doesn't feel depressed or anything. He always is able to take shelter of the Lord. Like Navkishori pointed me, I should mention this point. We were discussing yesterday, as you know, she was discussing about some point, some difficulty that she is facing. So we were just discussing that, and this I learned from Nityananda Pran Prabhu a little bit. Learned means I heard from him, and I'm trying to learn that. But what he said is that when you are facing a difficulty, then at that time, your goal is that you can actually sit down, let's say in the morning, for your chanting, and you can completely absorb yourself in chanting of the holy name, praying to Krishna that you can, so that you can be, one thing is you can be absorbed in that, you can continue in your service in the best way possible, irrespective of whatever is happening. And may Krishna guide you, because I don't know anything, and may the Lord guide me so that I can do the right thing. Whatever is the right thing. I don't know what is the right thing. That's the problem. But the taking shelter of the Lord is that at that time, I am not thinking about so many permutations and combinations myself. But I am actually totally thinking of, totally taking shelter of the Lord. Whatever Krishna, you know, you guide me or you help me so that I, first of all, I can always continue in my service nicely. I can always serve because that is my real position. And you can guide me in the right way to do the right thing. So it's because otherwise we are always involved in, I think, thinking about, you know, so many calculations that we have to do. But how do we get that clarity of consciousness? Or how do we actually... we'll be able to do the right thing is only if we actually totally rely on Krishna. So one of the practical ways to do that is during our chanting, we are really praying to Krishna that time. So I was, maybe later it can, this point can be discussed, but this is what you can see here. So I could think of some things, like I heard for Srila Prabhupada that one time he said this, that Maya cannot touch me. Prabhupada said something like that. I might be paraphrasing. But he said, Maya cannot touch me. And one time, then another time, another devotee is seeing Prabhupada praying to little deities. I don't know if it was others. There's a name also. I don't know. Somebody might know the names of the deities. But, you know, he was praying very intensely. Very intensely. So then devotee asks you, Prabhupada, what are you praying for? Prabhupada said, I'm just praying to Krishna to protect me from Maya. So he was very bewildered, says, so but you just said Maya cannot touch you. Then how is it that you are praying it so intensely to the little deities that you is? So Prabhupada said, that's why Maya cannot touch me. Because I am constantly praying that I see, praying to the Supreme Lord, that's why Maya cannot touch me. So this total shelter of always, and Prabhupada Maharaj so wonderfully says, in the lecture, I think that's such a wonderful point, that we cannot speak without Lord giving us anything. We cannot be locomotive, as he says. We cannot move without the Lord giving us the legs to walk. We cannot think without He giving us the brain to this. So what can we do? We cannot do anything. So is it an emotional point that we are dependent on the Lord? Is it a you know, sentimental belief system that I'm dependent on the Lord? It's not. I am 100% in every single thing of eating, sleeping, even all of those things. I'm totally dependent on the Lord, 100%. So what is there to think about? Oh, devotee always thinks himself dependent on the Lord. So he is great. No, he's not great. He's just factual. He's just factual. That is just, he is dependent on the Lord. Whereas you are thinking, or I am thinking, that I am not dependent on the Lord. And I am still walking, right? I am still breathing. But for every single thing, you know, sometimes just feel the bone structure. Sometimes feel the bone structure. Where did the bone structure come from? You're walking in this bone structure. So, it's good to have a little bit slim body sometimes. No, you don't. So where does all these bones come from? All of these things come from. I'm doing, and when you get a little bit sick, and then you realize, oh my God, what's going on? And then you realize, oh my God, how much am I dependent on this every single microsecond, nanosecond? You should go more nanoseconds. Every time dependent on the Lord. So devotee like Srila Prabhupada is constantly aware of that 100% of the time. So another sentence I heard one of the Prabhupada disciples saying about Prabhupada is, Prabhupada didn't say, actually this one, not just instructed us to chant Hare Krishna, but always chanted Hare Krishna. All of the photos of Prabhupada is with the bead bag. So I was so happy that we got the Prabhupada thing with, because even before that came, I was sometimes in Prabhupada, sometimes chant, you know, he's always like this. So, and then Nandasa Prabhu sent that photo, that is a photo of, you know, yeah, we are going to get a poster, you know, whatever, the deity with him chanting. And I was like, wow, because a few days before that, I was thinking about that. So Prabhupada is always chanting, all the photos he's chanting. Ramana Mataji said that, I heard when we went to Sharanagati or somewhere. She said, if you see Prabhupada's photo, he's always chanting in this beatback. I said, that's true, he's always chanting. So what is that? It was, when he is chanting, he is always taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. So that is the point. Then this is another verse. Taking shelter of Supreme Lord also means taking shelter of his words. So this is one beautiful thing I read. Maybe somebody else should read it. You want to read that, Mataji? What was?
Whatever Krishna said is good. Everything else is bad. Thus, our confusion is finished.
Yeah, that's it. Whatever Krishna said is good, everything else bad, bus, our confusion is finished. This is exact phrase. I'm not paraphrasing this one. So this is what? This is taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Because such ultimate, I heard that in also one of the Yadugar Prabhu's last, if you see Yadugar Prabhu's last DVD that he has made, and he is... in which, you know, after Prabhupada's funeral and everything, at the very end, then B.B. Govinda Swami Maharaj. So he says that Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's godbrother, he said that Prabhupada could do what he did. But he said Prabhupada was the greatest acharya which has ever come. He's the greatest acharya which has ever come. Why? Because he had the greatest faith in the holy name. Greatest faith in the holy name. This is Krishnadas Babaji. This is not Prabhupada's disciple speaking. This is God brother speaking. So you can see, what is that? There's faith in the holy name, or dependence on the holy name, dependence on Krishna's words, dependence on always praying to Krishna. It's basically dependence on the Supreme Lord. So 100% always dependence on the Supreme Lord is the quality of a devotee. It's not something, and he's factual, and it's not that he's emotional about it. So this is all another example. I was thinking, Prabhupada, you know, anybody has heard this one? You would have heard this. So Prabhupada, when he said when there'll be bombing which is happening in Calcutta or something like that, then what are you going to do if the bomb falls on you? So he said, finally the bomb. People will be thinking, what if he's falling on you? What are you going to do at that time? So I'll see Krishna in the bomb. I'll see Krishna in the bomb which is falling on me. So this is also dependence on Krishna at that calamity. This is not difference from, I don't think this is any different from Uttara calling out for Krishna. Because you may not call out to save yourself, but you are remembering Krishna at that time, and that is dependence on Krishna. It's not necessarily to save yourself. So also, I just remembered of Harilas Prabhu's example of a selfless servant. I might be a little bit running out of time. I took a little bit more here. I'll try to rush. But Harilas Prabhu said this, Harilas Prabhu gives an example, wonderful example of a selfless servant. He said, if you have a servant who always keeps serving you, and then sometime you ask him, okay, you are doing this service, so maybe you can take something. You try to give him something, some remuneration. He said, no, just give me roti dal. You know, Raghuram Swami talks like that. Just a little roti dal, something like that. That's it. I'm happy. And he's saying, really? Are you happy with that? No, yeah. So then he keeps serving you. Then he keeps serving you. And then sometime later, you know, have something. Have something, you know, okay, some clothes for your kids and some this more increase in salary and this. Oh, no, I just want a little bit, just somehow I can maintain myself. Goes on and on and on and on and on, and then he said it will go on forever like this. What if it goes on forever like this? That's a devotee. Because he is just only trying to serve. So now, what kind of affection would you have for such a servant? What kind of affection you will have? You will definitely have an affection like, oh, I'll do something for him. More than what you might do for everybody else that you are equal for. So that was a very good example. So that's the case of a devotee. He's always dependent. He's totally selfless. And Prabhupada is an example for us for that. So we can sing this one. It's almost like a... we'll say this one together, Sanskrit. Uttara uvacha.
पाहि पाहि महायोगिन देव देव जगतपते नान्यां त्वद् अभयं पश्ये यत्य मृत्यु परस्परम
उत्तरा सेड ओ लॉर्ड ऑफ लॉर्ड्स लॉर्ड ऑफ द यूनिवर्स दैट इज द देव देव जगतपते यू आर द ग्रेटेस्ट ऑफ मिस्टिक्स महायोगिन प्लीज प्रोटेक्ट मी दैट इज पाहि पाहि फॉर देयर इज नो वन एल्स हु कैन save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. So here she is saying that, okay, you know, you can see here she is pointing out to, she is saying Mahayogin. She is already saying, because she is going to say that a Brahmastra is coming on me, she is saying you are the greatest mystic, Mahayogin. You can do anything. Nobody else can do this. It's already coming on me now. So Mahayogin, right? So you can do anything. So you can already see that she is already pointing out that there is no one else who can save me. Na anyam abhayam prashye. Na anyam abhayam prashye means I do not see anybody else who can be fearless. So here it's going to Sridhar Swami in his purport has said that other than the Lord, no one can be devoid of fear. Na anyam abhayam prashye. I cannot see anybody other than the Lord who can be fearless. Everybody else is. So Lord is the only shelter of fearlessness for the surrendered soul. Krishna is their only shelter, their master. Okay. So, so now what is this fear of is being mentioned by Rompal Maharaj in his lecture. The fear is of illusion, of duality and of forgetting Krishna. So here she is saying, as you can see, I am, you know, she's talking about fear, you know, this, please protect me. So what is she fearful of? What a devotee is fearful of is, we will see later about Uttara's this thing. But what Maharaj is saying, what a devotee is fearful of is illusion, duality and of forgetting Krishna. Why? Because duality covers our remembrance of Krishna. So what if, why is being talked about duality here? Why is she saying in the world, you know, you are the only one who can save me from death in this world of duality. So getting into duality, Prabhupada talks about duality in his purport. He says features of duality, first of all, in this material world, there is dual, matter and spirit, right? And then there is the other elements of that are death. Death happens because of the matter and spirit. People are... And all of these things come with that, that there is enviousness and people are envious of each other, everyone is trying to be the master. Whereas in the world of the absolute, there is only spirit, there is only one master, everybody is trying to serve this master. So nobody is envious of each other and there is no matter and spirit combination. So there is no question of death. So this is only in this world of duality that all of these things are there. So, protection from the sea of duality, which is all around us, can be happened, as Maharaj said in his lecture, is by being in the mode of service and through spiritual conception. So, if we know that we are the soul, the real, what is our real identity as a servant, then and with that and by being in the mode of service, we can Otherwise, everywhere we are only going to see this duality, heat and cold and honor and dishonor and death and this, you know, and death and life and whatever, all of these things that we are going to see, it's all going to be all duality. But through these things, we can, by being in the mode of service and being in a spiritual conception, we can get out of this world of duality. Even while being in this world, we can see beyond the duality. Even while being in this world, right? That's the Rupa Goswami's verse, that even in this world, you can be Jivan Mukta. So, but the protection is not in terms of death, being saved from death. It's not a physical thing, because a devotee is also going to die, non-devotee is also going to die. So, all those things will remain the same. But a devotee is able to perceive or remember Krishna or at the time of death. That's the protection that he gets. He is able to think of Krishna at the time of death. So, I just wrote the example. Maharaj gives other example. I wrote the example of Stuka Krishna Prabhu, who was the disciple, who was a brahmachari in Radha Gopinath temple. And if you see his video, when he actually died, he is like, he's paralyzed from the waist down, and he's like, he got married like 5 days before we got married, on 9th of December 2004. I actually was in his, I happened to go to Radha Gopinath temple, and he was, his marriage was happening at that time. I didn't know. Later on, after his death, I see his video and I'm like, I attended this person's marriage. Because I happened to be there and I saw him getting married, and he was talking to Radhanath Maharaj and everything. And then you see Radhanath Maharaj glorifying him so much in his Vyas Puja lecture to Srila Prabhupada, lecture means letter to Srila Prabhupada, Maharaj is talking about Stuka Krishna Prabhu. So he was. So if you see, he is so happy, although he was so, he was in such a dilapidated condition, he was about to die, but he was so happy at that time. That means Krishna is protecting him by first of all having devotees around him, and he is able to think of the Supreme Lord at that time, that he can, his death is becoming so auspicious, actually, that he can. So this is, so the protection, so that means he's not in the world of duality anymore. He's really already is excited about going back to the spiritual world. How can you do that? It was almost impossible. Maharaj is saying in one of his lectures that Stuka Krishna was so more happy than I can think than anybody in Bombay who was striving so hard for sense gratification. Was striving so hard. Stuka Krishna probably more happy probably than him while being in a totally, is extreme pain, body totally gone, and he is more happy than him. So this is how Krishna is going to protect us, and when each of us die, when I die, and some devotees hopefully will be around and will be able to, we can think like that. Some devotees will be around and we can hopefully think about the Supreme Lord at that time. And it's also said that the Lord doesn't just, if you are sincere right now, then the Lord will help at that time. Lord will help. It's not that if I can't think at that time about Krishna, what will happen? No, Lord will help at that time because you have been sincere in your life. Okay. So now, I'm really getting late here. Huh? What should I do? It's 11th, almost 11:30. I'm going to do a little bit rush. What should I do? I'll just rush through now this thing. Oh my Lord, you are all powerful. A fiery iron arrow.
You can do the first part of next week
also. Whatever.
Okay,
I'm going to try to rush now. Because I think some of it is, the main points are, not really, but we'll try to rush and then we can, because I think that might affect the next day all. Oh my Lord, you are all powerful. A fiery iron arrow is coming towards me fast. My Lord, let it burn me personally if you so desire, but please do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. So the main point here is, devotee is not asking Krishna for favors. She is saying, let it burn me. But let it not burn my embryo. And here, Rumpad Maharaj says, initially I wrote, but devotee is praying for others. That's pretty obvious. But Maharaj is saying, she is praying for her service, not just for others. Because her service is to protect her child. And this is related to that you should be protecting children, which was mentioned before, that five types of beings. So her service is to protect. So for her service, she is praying, not just for protecting her. So she's not ashamed. In one sense, Prabhupada writes in the purport, she's not ashamed, like a lady talking about, please protect my child in the womb. But she's not ashamed in this entire assembly of people who are come to, to see of the Lord, to say openly about them, because that's for service. Okay, so this I think probably can be read by people, so I'm going to just go through this thing. But Ashwatthama was able to throw the Brahmastras even after all he suffered, because he still had his knowledge and memory. He had just lost his power and effulgence. And I'm just going to rush through this because we have less time. Suta Goswami said, having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, who is always very affectionate to his devotees, could at once understand that Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life in the Pandava family. So here the important, first of all, Krishna is patiently hearing her words. Okay, that's also interesting. He's patiently hearing it. And then he is always affectionate to his devotees. So the best verse obviously in this one is Bhakta Vatsala. So he is a Bhakta Vatsala. He could understand that Ashwatthama has thrown this weapon. So Maharaj says in this structure, what is the most prominent feature of Krishna? I didn't really, we could ask like that, but Maharaj says that is Bhakta Vatsala. That is the most prominent feature. He also says that he breaks one promise to keep another promise. What promise did he break? That he is not going to lift any weapon. Because the battle in a way is not really ended. Ashwatthama is still trying to fight. So he made a vow, he's not going to. But he breaks that vow again to move forward, to actually save his devotees, which is his greatest vow. So instead of trying to save his vow, like a great person who saved his vow, he doesn't care about that, he just saves his devotee. That's the point which he made. So, and Lord wants to protect his devotees, because that is for everyone's good. It's not just for the devotee's good, it's for everyone's good. Because he wanted the devotees to rule the world. That's another, in one point. And in another way, also the non-devotees, if they get killed, they are being stopped for doing more sins. So that's also good for them, in one sense. And if they're killed by the Lord, they are anyway getting liberation. So it's for everyone's good that he protects. Oh, foremost among the great thinkers, Shaunaka, seeing the glaring Brahmastra proceeding towards them, the Pandavas took up their 5 respective weapons. Now you might think, oh, Brahmastra was thrown only at them, right? How come the Pandavas? But it's not. It's 2 Brahmastras. It is 2 Brahmastras. One was to kill the 5 Pandavas, and another was to kill Maharaj Parikshit. So the purpose is to kill all remaining members of Pandava dynasty. Wipe it off completely. This Ashwatthama was really, you can imagine, he did the same thing by killing the 5 sons of the Pandavas. Now he wants to kill the Pandavas and Parikshit Maharaj. He wants to totally. So his hatred for the Pandavas was still there, as he was saying. The Almighty Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, having observed that a great danger was befalling his unallied devotees, who were fully surrendered souls, at once took up his Sudarshan disc to protect them. So he used his Sudarshan disc to protect them because it was an emergency. And the Pandavas, even if they lifted their weapons, they couldn't protect themselves. So Krishna, he took his Sudarshan weapon to protect them. Okay. So Prabhupada, in his characteristic style, he's going to compare Brahmastra with nuclear bombs. And you would think that, well, all of these things are going on. Why is Prabhupada comparing the radiation and heat of Brahmastra with of the nuclear bomb? I don't know, maybe ladies even more so, you might be feeling that way. Why? I feel interested when he says that. I can see there's a lot of value to that, but it's an interesting. He first of all will talk about that, and then he will talk about the. So he's saying a Brahmastra is more powerful than nuclear bombs. More radiation and heat, scientifically. Product of a subtler science, because the sound of a mantra given in the Vedas. Because subtle things are more stronger than the grosser things. Accurate, because it kills the target but spares the innocent. But an atom bomb cannot do that. So Pandavas again knew nothing but the Lord, and that is their qualification. And the Lord broke his vow to protect his devotees, because nothing else is more important for the Lord. His Bhakta Vatsala. The Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma. As such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, he covered the embryo of Uttara by his personal energy. So it's interesting. First of all, he's Yogeshwaro, so he can do anything, right? And then he's this Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna. It's clarified here that he protected, before he saying protected the embryo of Uttara, it said that he is anyway in the heart of every living entity simultaneously. So it's, what's the big deal for him? he's anyways there in the heart. So, you know, that mysticism is already going on. So it can be another mysticism that he is now in the womb of so it's not a big deal. So this is from 12th chapter where this is the same thing is described. In the 12th chapter, just more detail is given. O son of Bhrigu, when the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother Uttara and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. He was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with four hands. He dressed up completely. Earrings of molten gold and eyes blood red with fury as he loitered. He's angry also. As he loitered about, his club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. He's like the, you know, Shah Rukh Khan or somebody coming like that or something. So the Lord is coming like that. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. So that's what he had to do. Sun is evaporating drop. He was observed by a child who thought about who he was. So this is what. So Krishna is supreme mystic. Mystics are known for doing things which defy the laws of nature. But so that is what do the mystics do? They manipulate subtle laws of nature which seem to defy the gross laws of nature. That's what they do. But Krishna is already doing, you know, all of these mysticism, because he is not just within the heart, he is also within every atom in his Brahman form. So no mysticism is big enough for him. And another point just to remember is that Maharaj Parikshit actually died within. He actually died within. It's not, his embryonic body was burned by the Brahmastra and his second body was given by the Lord. So Prabhupada says that later, I think in the third chapter, third canto, Bhurjan Prabhu has pointed that out. Last two verses. O Shaunaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama was irresistible and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled when confronted by the strength of Vishnu. So here, Rumpad Maharaj makes an interesting point that the Brahmastra also coming from the Lord, in one sense, everything coming from the Lord. So it cannot be checked or counteracted. But the Lord is counteracting it. So, you know, somebody had asked Prabhupada this famous question, right? Can the Lord lift a stone which he cannot, you know, make a stone which he cannot lift? Right? So that's a stumbling question. You know, Rumpad Maharaj calls it stump the Swami question. He says, these are stump the Swami question. So it's like, because if you say, no, he cannot, oh, that means he cannot do something. Oh, he can, that means he cannot lift that stone. Right? So in both the cases, yes or no. So Prabhupada is the supreme mystic himself. So he said, yes, he can make it, but he will lift it after that. He'll make that stone which he cannot lift, then he'll lift it. So, because it is his internal potency that he, an ever increasing potency also, that he can do that. So this classic question can be answered. So now the interesting point is that because the Lord can do everything, devotee is always happy, who is always another shelter of one who is a supreme mystic. No worries. My father is here, my daddy. So devotee is always, because he can counteract everything, right? A position of fearlessness. The only thing he fears is, I might forget Krishna. And then Maharaj says that by chanting the Maha Mantra in constant remembrance, Krishna admits us into his spiritual realm and we will never forget him. By doing that, if we never forget him, then in we are in that shelter, then there is nothing to fear. So he becomes really fearless. Last words. O Brahmanas, first he addressed to Shaunaka Rishi, the previous verse. Then he wanted to address the Brahmanas because they might think, oh, what's going on? How could he do this? So how could he enter the womb? O Brahmanas, do not think this to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious and infallible personality of Godhead. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he himself is unborn. So again, interesting. He himself is unborn. I mean, he is not getting created or anything, but he is creating and maintaining and destroying. Creating, maintaining and destroying. So he is in a totally supreme, extreme position, essentially. He is unborn, but everything is created, maintained, or destroyed by him. He is unstoppable. Nothing can put a brake on him. He can create, maintain, destroy anything as and when he wishes. So here, Rupa Maharaj just brings up very important point that in some other religions, there is a concept of a Satan. It's a concept of a station, which Satan means is another being who is equally powerful as God, who is evil, or somewhat equally powerful. He can challenge or something, right? So there is that Satan who is there. And in one sense, they might also say other religions are satanic. So we have to destroy other religions also. But here, in the Vedic understanding, is that there is no Satan. There is only that one all good supreme. So very dramatically different thing, because people think of devatas and demons and everything, but there is only one. So there is no Satan, equally powerful and needed to God. So what is really evil? Only our free will. Only that free will of man's usage of that free will. Not our free will, but that man's usage of the free will that can cause any evil. That's it. And to the degree that the free will is, you know, so you can create that evil to the degree you are given that free will. But even if you do some nonsense, right, that nonsense can also be retracted anytime by the Lord. It's not that you can create some nonsense which the Lord cannot retract. So that also Maharaj is pointing out. First of all, little bit of that evil can be there because of your own free will. And even if you do some nonsense, that can be retracted also. Because, in fact, that free will is also rewarded to you. I heard in another lecture, it's just rewarded to you. It's something which is given to you. So it's been given to you. Based on that, in your own sphere, you can do nonsense. But even that nonsense can be removed if the Lord wants. So essentially, he is all good that. So essentially, everything is just a spark of my splendor. He is that supreme. So coming to the summary. First was just Krishna's, initial point was the Krishna's sweet exchanges with his devotees. How do you pacify one in grief? Through vision of transcendental, through getting the vision, chakshu, of transcendental knowledge given by the devotees. Or just be there. As our Prabhuji, Guruji has pointed out, which he always does himself. He is always there to help people. So just be there, help out. And five categories of beings to be protected were mentioned. And then we talked about Lord's protection. Lord is equal to all, especially looks after one who is fully dependent upon him. The Lord's most prominent feature is Bhakta Vatsala. I think this one is talked about the most. I think this is most important point in this, where we talked about that we are fully dependent on him. It is factual. And the devotee is factual in the fact of recognizing that. He is not that he is some, somebody who has somehow got some mystic power to understand that. He is just factual about it. And Lord's most prominent feature is the Bhakta Vatsala. So he saves, Lord protects one from the world of duality, of fear, death and envy. And a devotee is greater than any materialist, as Bhakti Vikas Maharaj has pointed out, because he is the best recipient of his mercy. And finally, the devotee thinks, my daddy is the best. So it's all the children talking about my daddy is the best, but everybody can say my daddy is the best, because if they can really see that, there is no Satan for this daddy. So my daddy is the best. Okay, I think we can go through that verses reading, and then after that questions can be answered by Govindcharan Prabhu and Jagannath Kirtan Prabhu.
We can pause the recording.
Okay, sorry. Stop.